Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta, my amateur radio call scientist and 1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading today World Radio Magazine for the month of January 2009 here on the Courage Handy Ham System. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512, or you can email us at handyham@courage.org. Our website is www.handyham.org. World Radio, to this point of publication, has been published by World Radio Incorporated. The publisher, Armand Noble, N6WR. The editor, Nancy Kott, K-O-T-T. Her call is W-Z-8-C. World Radio's current headquarters are at 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. Of course, with the new year, 2009, a lot has happened with World Radio as well. I'll begin to explain the whole situation with Publisher's Microphone. This commentary is titled CQ to Publish World Radio. The author of this informational piece is Armand Noble, call N6WR. When one reaches his mid-70s, he notices that many his age and younger have headed to the Big D expedition in the sky. Thus, it was decided that it would be more prudent to work on a smooth transition regarding the continued publication of World Radio. To someone in the magazine field, and Dick Ross, K2MGA of CQ, and I have talked about this, a magazine is almost like having a child. It's a personal thing between the magazine and its readers. There is a bond. We're not stamping out the same salt and pepper shakers or lawn furniture. It is thoughts and ideas, and every month it's something different. At a convention, I was always immensely touched when someone would say to me, "I love World Radio." Many have asked why I started this magazine back in 1971. Well, my background was in journalism. That included being at the Watts riots, two trips to Vietnam, TV reporter, and morning anchor at an alt-news radio station. One day, when reading an amateur radio magazine, I noticed that their lead article was another construction article for a grounded grid 4-811A linear amplifier. Way in the back of the magazine, in mouse type, was a short mention that what the amateurs had done to help the people after a massive earthquake in Peru. I thought that such reportage had it all backward. What we did with this wonderful thing called amateur radio is more important than what we did it with. Having worked for one of the great news magazines, I wanted to create a news magazine for amateur radio. At that time, when it seemed most hams were not interested in public service, and when someone submitted such an article to QST, that's the ARRL's magazine, they often were told that QST readers would not be interested and the article would find a home with World Radio. I was privileged to know many of the giants of this great avocation and have made many, many friends. What made this such a great time is that, different from a magazine issued from a New York skyscraper with a word coming down from on high, it has been an exchange of ideas and thoughts from the readers. My deep sympathies to all the fine columnists we have had over the years and all those who submitted articles. Special mention should be made of my wife, Helen. She gave up her career in teaching to do more office-type work than could be done by any two other people. My advice to young people reading this, marry a smart one. And there is Norm Brooks, call K6FO, who came aboard as volunteer in the very earliest days and continues as the final proofreader at the age of 90-plus. He still catches typos and grammar clinkers that the three others miss. And special kudos to the CWS Nancy Kott, W-Z-8-C, who served as editor for the past 6 years while also running the Fists CW group and holding down another job. As the old adage goes, if you want something done, give it to a busy person. The dealings with Dick Ross of CQ Publications were quick and fair. Helen and I will be partially provided for in our golden years. Thanks to our advertisers, smart people. They were here while the whole lot of others could never figure out, even with me telling them often, the virtue of the lowest cost per amateur that we offered. As I reread what I've written, I see truly that words have proven to be inadequate in expressing my feelings to and about all. Look for N6WR on field day. Harmon Noble, N6WR. Now, if you listeners that may by chance have subscriptions to World Radio Magazine in your regular life, I'll have more specific information about that in a few minutes, but I'll start now with the regular features in the magazine, beginning with Newsfront, World Radio Newsfront. This material is gleaned from Amateur Radio News, courtesy of the ARRL Letter and Newsline. Singapore, new visitor's license announced. It's now official. The Singapore Licensing Authority has now announced that temporary amateur licenses are available to radio amateurs visiting Singapore. The application should be made 3 weeks before arrival, and a license is typically valid for a 3-month period. $50 will be charged. The application process and forms are posted on the Singapore Info Communications Development Authority government website. Visitors must use their call sign preceded by Singapore's 9V1, 9 Victor 1, prefix while on the air. That's thanks to Southgate through AR News. Our next Newsfront piece, beware of amateur radio fishers. The fishers are out there, and in this case we spell the fishers, P-H-I-S-H-E-R-S. These are electronic scam artists who want your personal information to rob you blind, and they will go to great lengths to get you to release it, even claiming that it's needed in some way for amateur radio. The American Radio Relay League says it has received several reports from members with ARRL.net email accounts who have recently been contacted via email asking for personal information such as user names and passwords. The ARRL says these emails are fraudulent attempts at phishing and did not originate from ARRL. There was never a time when the league would ask via mass email for user names or passwords of ARRL.net users. If you receive an email asking for personal information, do not respond, even if it appears to come from some legitimate source you know and trust. Instead, delete it and go on with life. Both you and your bank account will be happier that you did. That's furnished by the American Radio Relay League through Newsline. Repeater operational from the ISS, the International Space Station. Roy Stokes, Alpha Golf 5 Delta, says that astronaut Mike Finks, KE5AIT, has turned on the crossband repeater on board the International Space Station, and early reports indicate its coverage is quite good to those within its ever-shifting radio range. The worldwide frequencies are 437.80 MHz as your uplink, while you listen on 145.80 MHz as the downlink, or output channel. Operation is similar to working the AMSAT OSCA 51 satellite or any ground-based crossband system. The big difference is that in this case, you literally talk through the repeater on board the ISS to other hams within range of the ISS radio footprint on the ground. How long the crossband repeater will remain in operation is not known. Frequency 145.8 MHz is also used for normal QSOs and school contacts. You can expect it to be off during those times. Also, the crossband repeater uses the crossband repeater function of the onboard Kenwood D700 radio. This unit is also used for other on-orbit amateur radio operations, and during those periods, the repeater will likely be off the air. That was filed courtesy ARISS Reflector. Now, here's a newsflash for some of you DX chaser, that's shortwave listeners and so forth. Crozet, spelled C-R-O-Z-E-T, will be on in late 2009. The ninth most sought after DXEC entity will be activated in 2009 by F4DYW, Foxtrot 4 Delta Yankee Whiskey, who will take to the airways from Crozet Island between 01 December and 30 November of next year. Crozet is listed in the top 10 most wanted contacts in the DX magazine's listing. The call, F4DYW, says that he will use the call sign FT5WO, Foxtrot Tango 5 Whiskey Oscar, while on Crozet, and his activity will be single sideband only on 40, 20, and 15 meters using 100 watts in dipoles. QSL will go to his home call, which again is F4DYW, either direct or by the Bureau. So watch for updates on the different publications as the time frame comes near. It's still a year away. Aye, aye. Our next piece, W6HRO from HRO in Anaheim, California. Ham radio outlet in Anaheim, California is now a low-power D-Star repeater set up in the store. W6HRO operates on both 70 and 23 centimeters. It was originally established to help demonstrate the D-Star equipment, but according to store manager Janet Margelli, KL7MF, it was found to have pretty fair coverage around parts of Orange County, California. The actual operating frequency are W6HRO-A on 1282.550 MHz with a negative 12 MHz input offset, and W6HRO-B on 447.800 out with a negative 5 MHz input offset. Both receive and transmit in the normal D-Star format and are connected to the National Gateway. Both bands also retransmit these news line reports once every week. As far as we know, W6HRO is the first D-Star repeater to serve as a newsline outlet. That was supplied by KL7MF through the newsline. Here's an exciting but very short piece. Call sign AA4RC, Alpha Alpha 4 Romeo Charlie, explains amateur radio to 10,000 scouts. A word of congratulations to Robin Cutshaw, AA4RC, who recently got on the air to demonstrate amateur radio and amateur satellites to 10,000 scouts. The scouts were camped out at Alabama's Talladega Speedway as part of an outing. Robin's team was also hosting the 2008 AMSAT Space Symposium in Atlanta. He's to be congratulated on doing both jobs. Well done, Robin. And that bit of news was filed by ANS through AR Newsline. I'll pick up our first feature piece in World Radio, January 2009. It's titled, Welcome Home, USS Intrepid. The author here is Robert W. Lubenstein. His call is WA2AXZ. It is hard to believe, but just 2 years ago, tugboats were straining at the ropes to pull this historic World War II aircraft carrier, the USS Intrepid, from its moorings. After 2 decades at Pier 86 at West 46th Street in New York City, layers of silt and mud deposited from the Hudson River held it fast. The Army Corps of Engineers and contractors were called in to dredge the props clear for a subsequent and successful departure for much-needed exterior and interior rehab work. While the great ship was in dry dock receiving a fresh coat of paint, the massive props were removed and dispatched for display at various sites. Upon completion at the dock, the ship was towed to the Staten Island home port, where interior work to the exhibit space was performed. The ancient Pier 86 was completely rebuilt with a new administration and museum building, including new gangways for visitors to safely board the ship. In the background, a large illuminated billboard ticked off the days until Intrepid's return. I was in contact with Norm Dreschel, W-A-3-K-E-Y, the webmaster for the Intrepid, and together, through the kindness of the USS Intrepid Association, a special shipboard ham event to commemorate this historic day was arranged. At dawn on 02 October 2008, former crew members met at the Staten Island home port to begin this most anticipated return of Intrepid to its permanent berth along the Hudson. We were greeted with a magnificent sunrise over the bow of the carrier. Norm and I met up with Lee Cahill, WB3CUU, and together we boarded and began to set up the station on the flight deck forward of the bridge alongside of Blue Angel's fighter jet. At the appointed hour, bright red McAllister tugs nudged the ship from the dock to the cheers of the throngs along the pier and crew members manning the rails. The New York City Police marching band played patriotic tunes while we began calling CQ and welcoming the amateur community aboard for this historic voyage. Sounds like fun, huh, folks? Through our HF special event on 20 and 40 meters, and through the kindness of the linked repeaters of W2CMA/N2ROW and N2HBA, many amateur operators got to speak with us and learn more about the history and service of Intrepid. New York City Fire Department fireboats spray plumes of red, white, and blue water into the air as we pass the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor. Upon reaching the mouth of the Hudson across from the World Trade Center site, radio silence was observed as a giant flag was unfurled and a memorial was held for those lost on 11 September 2001. Slowly, the new Pier 86 came into view, and with great skill and care, along with tumultuous fanfare from the assembled crowd, the tugs landed Intrepid to once again become part of the city skyline, welcoming all to visit this impressive sea, air, and space museum. For more information about the USS Intrepid, you can visit the following website, www.intrepidmuseum.org, that's one word, www.intrepidmuseum.org, and you can go to the WA3KEY.com website. So now, folks, that I've read you a couple of nice and easy, interesting pieces of information, I'm going to go back to this world radio situation regarding subscriptions. Here it goes. How your world radio subscription will be honored by CQ Magazine. Choices, choices, choices. CQ Communications Incorporated, publisher of CQ Amateur Radio, Popular Communications, and CQ VHF Magazine, has acquired World Radio Magazine. As part of our responsibility of that acquisition, we will be fulfilling World Radio subscriptions with publications from the CQ Group. World Radio will continue to be published as an online-only magazine, but our current plan is to make it open access without charging for subscriptions. Since there are several different possible subscription situations with our new friends from World Radio, we have several different solutions designed to fit everyone's needs. We are confident that one of the solutions will fit into your personal situation, and we pledge to work with you to the best of our ability to make the transition as smooth and pleasant as possible. However, you have choices to make. Here are the situations that we're anticipating. Beginning with regular, non-life World Radio subscribers. Current subscribers to World Radio will receive one issue of CQ for each issue of World Radio they are currently scheduled to receive. For instance, if you have 18 issues of World Radio still due, you will receive 18 issues of CQ instead. If you are already a subscriber to CQ, you will add the World Radio issues to your existing CQ subscription. You will also have the option of having your World Radio subscription fulfilled with either Popular Communications magazine, that's a title, Popular Communications, or a title, CQ VHF magazine, on a year-for-year basis. That is, if you have 12 issues remaining on your World Radio subscription and decide that you'd rather receive CQVHF instead of adding on to your CQ subscription, we'll set you up with a year's worth of CQVHF, which means you'll receive the next four issues of CQVHF, which is a quarterly publication. Now, with respect to live subscribers to World Radio, there are quite a few of them, folks. Here's where things get more complicated. Many subscribers to World Radio have signed up for a very deeply discounted lifetime subscription. None of the subscription price you paid for that life subscription has come to CQ, making it economically impossible for CQ to continue to honor your old World Radio life subscription. But you're not going to be left out in the cold. Instead, we will honor the full amount you paid for your World Radio Life subscription and apply that full amount to a new subscription to CQ if you don't already subscribe at the regular CQ subscription rate of $36.95 per year, or b apply the amount you paid to a subscription to one of CQ's sister publications, CQ VHF or Popular Communications. For example, if you paid $100 for a World Radio Life subscription way back in 1987 and have received issues ever since, we'll credit the entire $100 towards a new CQ subscription, which will have CQ coming your way for the next 33 months. That's $100 worth, in other words. What if you also have a life subscription to CQ? You have the option of transferring your life value to another of the CQ publications using the same calculations as described above. For instance, if you have a $100 lifetime value to your credit and decide that you'd like to receive Popular Communications, the subscription you'd receive would be 37 issues. That figures out to $100 divided by the Popular Communications rate of $32.95, which equals 3.03 years, which we will round up to 37 issues. You get it? If none of the above life subscription solutions fits your interests, there's still another option available to you. Use your lifetime value to purchase items of equal value from the CQ bookstore. That includes books, CDs, calendars, and apparel, and that value may also be applied towards any shipping charges. We want to make you as happy as possible during this transition. Think about how you'd like to handle your personal situation. If your choice is to receive CQ or extend your current CQ subscription, no action is necessary. Your subscription will begin with the February issue, or extend it appropriately. If you'd like to receive one of our other publications, you have to notify us in writing by mail or fax by January the 5th. Simply jot down your complete World Radio address label information and note your magazine choice below it. Mail or fax this information to us at the following: CQ Communications, Inc., 25 New Bridge Road. Newbridge is spelled N-E-W-B-R-I-D-G-E, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, H-I-C-K-S-V-I-L-L-E, Hicksville, New York, N-Y, zipper 11801. Now, importantly, if you want to fax the information, here's the fax number. Area 516-681-2926. And remember, World Radio will continue to be published as an online-only magazine with open access through the CQ web page, which is www.cq-amateur-radio.com, without charge. Choices, choices, choices. Well, let's say we take a peek now at the section titled FM, VHF, and repeaters. The author here is Bill Pasternak, called WA6ITF. I was looking for a positive note with which to begin 2009, and this has to be it. It's a story of true ham radio generosity and support for those in their community. According to a news report on KTVB Television News, two new repeaters dedicated to rescue service are now up and running in Idaho's Wood River Valley and Sawtooth National Forest. This, thanks to the dedication of members of the Wood River Amateur Radio Club that spent $15,000 installing two radio systems. The recently installed radio relay units are located on Mount Baldy and Galena Summit. The news report says that they are filling the gap in emergency response that was desperately lacking in the Sawtooth National Forest, which is a dead zone for cellular telephone service. The report also noted that prior to the installation of the repeaters, direct point-to-point radio communication was frequently impossible. Nice work, Wood River Amateur Radio Club. You deserve a collective pat on the back from all in the ham radio community for doing this. NASA scientists call 2008 the blankest sunspot year of the space age. I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings so early in the year, but regardless if you operate above or below the 50 MHz HF or 2 VHF dividing line, the wait for better DX conditions continues. And if you believe what many solar researchers are saying, it could be a longer wait than originally projected. Astronomers who count sunspots have announced that 2008 is now the blankest year of the space age. NASA Science News says that as of 27 September, the sun had no visible sunspots on 200 days of this year. To find a year with more blank suns, you have to go back to 1954. That is 3 years before the launch of Sputnik. It was also the year that the sun's disk was devoid of sunspots 241 days. And right now, the prognosis for increased solar activity seems dim. David Hathaway is a solar physicist at the NASA Marshall Space Flight Center. He says that sunspot counts are at a 50-year low and that we are experiencing a deep minimum of the solar cycle. D-Star comes to the Azores. D-Star has come to one of the remotest points on the globe. The first D-Star repeater in the Azores Islands is on the air. Operating as CQ0DAHB, that's Charlie Quebec 0 Delta Alpha Hotel hyphen B, this D-Star repeater is located on Santa Barbara Mountain on Terceira Island. It operates on UHF channel RU576. This translates into a transmit frequency of 438.450 MHz and receive frequency of 430.850 MHz. Station CQ0DAH-B is transmitting 25 watts out to an unspecified antenna. The adoption of D-Star in a remote outpost like the Azores is very significant since ham gear is not easy to come by in that part of the world. What it also seems to mean is that the D-Star digital system is quickly becoming the world standard. Some years down the road, it will eventually replace analog FM for ham radio utility repeater communications, even though it is only supported by ICOM, with most other manufacturers having turned their backs on it or trying to push alternative systems, alternatives that the world's ham radio community is showing little interest in adopting. Ham Radio News Delivery and APRS. Bob Bruninger, WB4APR, reports that he has created a new APRS information website that provides a look at who is transmitting ham radio newscasts. The new webpage is designed to help those Newsline, RAIN, and ARRL audio volunteers to get their APRS objects on the air. The concept requires the cooperation and support of listeners to these reports. According to Bob, while a report is on the air, an APRS operator in that area should be putting out on an approved APRS frequency as a live object at the time of the event. That object would show up on the front panel of every APRS mobile displaying the frequency to listen to, the direction and distance to the repeater, and the topic being transmitted. Bob's News, APRS News and Information webpage includes Amateur Radio Newsline, the RAIN report, and the ARRL Audio News. You can find it online at www.aprs.org/on-air-beacons.html. Well, let's move along now to the YL sections. That's young ladies in amateur radio. The young ladies could be anywhere from zero age to you name it. This is headlined ALARA Meet 2008. It's ALARA Meet 2008. The author here, Cheryl Muir, M-U-H-R. Cheryl's call is N0WBV. YLs from all over the world came to catch up and have some fun in Ulverston, Tasmania, when the Australian Ladies Amateur Radio Association, that's the ALARA, held their ninth ALARA Meet 2008 in Tasmania. An island off the coast of the Australian mainland, Tasmania, prefix Victor Kilo 7, VK7, is also a state in Australia. 12 September, some ladies came early for the Friday evening dinner to catch up with long-lost friends and have an eyeball cuso with some new ones. With ALARA founded in 1975, this meet was special because the 33rd anniversary of the organization, with 33 having special meaning for YLs. The term 33 is used only YL to YL. It means love and friendship from one woman to another. It is used in the same manner as 73 and is never plural. Susan Brain, B-R-A-I-N, Victor Kilo 7, Lima Uniform Victor, organized a 2008 event. She was also a wonderful asset in helping me make arrangements overseas. With her OM, Alan, VK7JAB, and two daughters, Natalie and Kira Lee, helping, Susan made the event special. Thanks to all the VK7 ladies for hosting and everyone who helped. Attendees came from Australia, of course, but there were also quite a few members from New Zealand and even one from the United States. Never invite the author of an amateur radio event, as she is very likely to attend with OM and in-laws included. Hi. And not just ALARA was represented. There were quite a few other groups included as well. All these groups have one thing in common. They are all YL, amateur radio groups from around the world. Saturday, 13 September, led the way for registration, more eyeball QSOs, and the pictures of the various members by call, area, and organization they belong to around the world. There was even a picture of all the OMs who came and who support the YLs in amateur radio. Saturday morning also included the official opening, presentations, and morning tea before heading off to tour the Axeman's Hall of Fame and Timberworks. After the tour, we all headed back on our buses for the great dinner. Sunday included more tours, and even the on-and-off rain of the Tasmanian spring didn't dampen spirits. I do believe we were fed at every stop, and I, for one, really enjoyed it. I am thankful to be sponsored in the ALARA, as well as many of the YL clubs around the world. To which of these international clubs do you belong? Which have you heard of before? Do you need to know more about them? Let me know for future columns. If you are an officer of one of these organizations, please send me information to spread the word on what your YL group is doing. And Cheryl Muir goes on with what are YLs doing? Don't forget to listen for a number of YLs operating from VP8, Victor Papa 8, January 18th to around the 30th, arriving a day before and leaving a day after. They will be on a multitude of bands and moats, so be on the lookout for them. This would be a great time to add a YL country if you are working on YLDXCC. If you're interested in making a communication with Cheryl Muir, M-U-H-R, her email is her call sign, November 0 Whiskey Bravo Victor. I'll repeat it, N0WBV at earthlink, E-A-R-T-H-L-I-N-K, .net. Or you can write to Cheryl at P.O. Box 342, Littleton, Colorado, C-O. Zip code 80160. So as we move along now in the January 2009 reading of World Radio Magazine, we'll go to the QCWA column, Quarter Century Wireless Association. The contributing author here is Alan Pickering, KJ9N. He titles this piece, Jacking Up the Jaded. My desk copy of the Venerable Oxford Dictionary reads, jaded, adjective, tired or worn out, surfeited, exhausted, weary, spent, decrepit, fagged out, done in, beat, pushed, pooped. You get the idea, because more than once you've wondered about the future of the Quarter Century Wireless Association chapter you attend, seeing that at times it is not much more than a bunch of jaded old codgers gathered to celebrate a past that is hardly worth remembering. Is there any way to jack up these guys, yourself included, so that going to a QCWA meeting is clearly an energizing and exciting event? That concern was certainly an often expressed discussion topic at the most recent National QCWA Convention in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And although no magic bullet emerged that I was aware of, I did decide I'd do some back-home checking just to satisfy myself that if one of the chapters near at hand had found even a partial answer, that I ought to know about it and tell some others. And lo and behold, I discovered a QCWA chapter which is very much alive and well simply because they have taken on an important and unique project of assisting in the recovery and healthy rehabilitation of abandoned and abused exotic wildlife. Exotic? Wildlife? Yep. Such as tigers and bears, lions and leopards, cougars and monkeys, baboons and related primates, all of whom, as a separate species, are endangered and without our help will likely soon become extinct. You see, the truth is that there are many species struggling to survive, some so threatened that they may become extinct within our own lifetime. In fact, I am told that 3 tiger subspecies have already become extinct in this century, and once gone, they will never return. Fortunately, on the west central coast of Florida, not more than 50 miles from my shack and my antennas, there is a place where abandoned and abused exotic animals are recovered and rehabilitated. Injured wildlife, often declawed, defanged, or altered by previous owners, are cared for by a dedicated handful of local Florida residents, including the members of one QCWA chapter in the immediate area. What do these volunteers do in the way of exotic animal care? One thing the QCWA group does is to play with the animals under their care. These beasts love toys such as bowling pins, bowling balls, palm fronds, soccer balls, and baseballs. The primates must be challenged daily to think and solve simple problems. Objects that contain treats require the animal in question to figure out ways to obtain the treat. Exotic animals get bored without a regular program that stimulates them mentally, so their toys are changed often and new ones substituted. I am the same way. And attending Hempfest in order to twist the dials on the newest Japanese goodie gadget is a human version I most enjoy. Interesting, but so what? You are probably asking. Well, the skinny on what this particular QCWA chapter is about in its programming is this. Instead of constantly searching for a hot program to secure each month, this QCWA chapter has found a fascinating program in the community that stimulates and interests them. So instead of always trying to get someone to come to them and entertain them, they have decided to go for 3 months to a place that stimulates and interests them in ways that do not directly touch upon amateur radio. If you can't get the mountain to come to you, then you go to the mountain. A neat idea for maintaining chapter interest and also accomplishing tasks that are both worthwhile and energizing, thus jacking up the jaded. Of course, if you plan to adopt this idea to your chapter, then you'll have to come up with a place or places to visit, field trips, as it were. With a few preliminary phone calls, you ought to be able to line up a visit to an aircraft radio repair shop at your local airport. How about a marine radio operation if you are on or near the coast? School buses are interestingly linked by mobile radio these days, so check them out too. In fact, let your chapter propose the venues for your visits, and in many instances, the visits you'll be able to demonstrate amateur radio in return as well. By the way, speaking of travel and field tripping, start now to consider joining your QCWA colleagues on the 2009 QCWA Caribbean Convention Cruise. Planning is complete thanks to QCWA board member and veteran cruiser Larry McAlvey. Larry's call is WA9JMO. Holland America's new cruise ship, the Eurodam, will carry you in splendid luxury for 7 days, the 24th through 31st of October, to and from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, to the Grand Turks and Caicos, San Juan, St. Thomas, and the Bahamas. The ship will have amateur radio equipment from ICOM available around the clock. Amateur radio forums and lectures are planned en route. The Eurodam has 11 passenger decks, lounges, bars, and numerous restaurants with food and drink available 24/7. The cost of the cruise has been greatly discounted, and each traveler will be granted $25 shipboard credit to spend as you wish. Integrated air travel to Fort Lauderdale can be arranged through our travel agent, White Travel Service, in West Hartford, Connecticut. Stateroom cabins range from $579 to $1,339 for deluxe suites. If you haven't been on a Larry McAlvey managed QCWA cruise, you have a real treat in store. So call Larry at area 262-639-7327 or White Travel at 800-547-4790 and watch for further details in the QCWA Journal and on the website for QCWA, www.qcwa.org. That's all I have for you this month, dear hearts. Remember that we are the elite, the proud, and the many. We are the QCWA. Until next time, 73DE, Allen, KJ9N. Folks, you can be in contact with Alan Pickering, KJ9N, by reaching him through email at kj9n@arrl.net or his home mailing address, 31860, that is 31860, Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, Grade, G-R-A-D-E, Road, Taylor, Grade, Road, Duet, Florida, D-U-E-T-T-E, F-L, zip code 33834. What follows now is something about the Hamvention in Dayton, Ohio. The 2009 award nominations. The Dayton Hamvention now is accepting nominations for its 2009 Amateur of the Year, Special Achievement, and Technical Excellence Awards. The deadline for nominations is 18 February 2009. All amateur radio operators are eligible. The winners will be recognized at the 2009 Hamvention, which runs 15 through 17 May. The Amateur of the Year award goes to an individual who has made a long-term outstanding commitment to the advancement of amateur radio. The Technical Excellence Award is for the person who has made an outstanding technical advancement in the field of amateur radio. The Special Achievement Award honors someone who has made an outstanding contribution to the advancement of amateur radio, usually someone who has spearheaded a significant project. The Hamvention Awards Committee makes the decision on all awards based in part upon the information it receives and not on the number of nominations submitted. Documentation that informs the awards committee of a candidate's accomplishments may include magazine articles, newsletters, newspaper clippings, and even videos. These materials become the property of Hamvention and will not be returned. Additional details on these awards and a nomination form are available on the Dayton Hamvention website. Nominations also are accepted via U.S. mail to Dayton Hamvention Awards, P.O. Box 964, Dayton, Ohio, 45401. Our next article is authored by Carol Perry, WB2MGP, in the Youth Forum. She titles this work, Let's Reinvent the Wheel. There are so many obvious benefits of making a ham radio program part of a school's curriculum package that we often fail to recognize the opportunity of skill building in areas of children's development that aren't so obvious at first. If you are a teacher who is making a pitch to a principal to include a ham radio program, you will, of course, talk about teaching geography, social studies, language arts, current events, and science and math. Please be sure to point out the hidden skills of creativity, analytical thinking, and deductive reasoning that are integral parts of your ham radio lessons. I taught 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, and it was always wonderfully amazing to me how each class reacted so differently and so creatively when given a chance through a high motivation lesson or unit. I'll share my lessons with you about inventions and inventors, as I did with the social studies teachers in my school. Adding enrichment activities to social studies and science teachers' lessons will gain you support from those teachers in your school. When introducing the unit on inventions, I tell the class to imagine a world without many of the things we take for granted, like batteries, compasses, or wheels. How did these and other things get invented? Most inventions get started by ordinary people who get annoyed with a practical problem. When they become irritated enough, they may get inspired to solve the problem with an invention. Other inventions are the byproducts of scientific investigation. For example, Alessandro Volta didn't imagine a battery and then set out to invent it. His friend Luigi Galvani had discovered that the legs of a dead frog would twitch when touched by metal. Volta was troubled by Galvani's explanation that animals contained electricity even when dead, and he set out to find what really caused the twitching. The end result was wet cell battery. Other inventors are people who are motivated to make the world a better place. They experiment and try all different ways of accomplishing things. Michael Faraday was convinced that magnetism could create electricity. He experimented for years with different arrangements of magnets and copper wire before he found one that produced electrical current. Inventors must be determined people who don't give up easily or get discouraged. Then inventors must give their inventions to the world. Perhaps the invention only solved that person's problem. But maybe other people in the world will like it and use it. There are several ways to approach the problem-solving part of different inventors' lives. You can have the children study the biographies of the people you'll want to be talking about. Let them realize that you don't have to be a genius sitting in a lab wearing a lab coat to have creative ideas in science. In 1791, the Chappe brothers created an optical telegraph. They placed a large pivoting wooden panel on top of a castle in France. One side of the panel was painted white and the other black. By using a code book and flipping the panel from one side to the other in a pattern, René Chappe composed and sent the message. Claude Chappe was in a house 10 miles away using a telescope to view the panel and another copy of the code book to translate the series of flashes of black and white. A message had traveled 10 miles in 4 minutes, 15 times the speed of a horse. The depth and detail that you go into about the lives of inventors depends a lot on the age and grade of your students. Be sure to stress how initial failures or lack of support does not deter a really determined inventor. A creative science project for your students, as suggested by Ruth Kessinger's book titled Reinvent the Wheel, would be to reinvent the Chappe brothers' optical telegraph and create a code book for 26 letters and 10 numbers. The Chappe brothers' invention looked like a person with his arms outstretched. The arms of their telegraph could pivot at the shoulder and could bend up and down at the elbow. Have the students make 2 telegraphs and talk silently with a friend. We have some suggested materials: modeling clay, corrugated cardboard, scissors, nail. brass brad paper fasteners. Place the materials in the center of a large table. Sit back and watch what inspired youngsters can do. Thanks a lot to Carol Perry, WB2MGP, for that information. You can contact Carol by email at WB2MGP@ix.netcom.com. That's ix.netcom.com. Let's go to old time radio now. Luck, Fate, and Radio, Our Personal History. The submitting author here is Al Miller. Call VE7KC. Having reached an age where one tends to reflect on their path through life, I have formed a few conclusions. In my case, I feel that luck, fate, and radio have had a complete hand in creating my path. Going back to my earliest memory, it probably all started by what happened in 1925 when I was 9 years old. We moved to Victoria, that's Canada, and my father lost all his money in a bad real estate deal. It did not read the fine print in the mortgage. A year later, we were financially broke, so my father moved to Vancouver to look for employment. For me, as a 10-year-old, having come from the farm, I found the big city highly exciting. The fact that my folks were out of money had little impact, as there were so many interesting things to see and do. By selling papers on the street or carrying baggage at the train station, I could earn a nickel or a dime and go to a cowboy movie. The one thing that probably put me on the path to radio was a book in the children's section of the Carnegie Public Library. While looking for things like Peter Rabbit and the Jungle Book, I happened on a British book on electricity. One chapter that caught my attention described how to make a crystal set on the lid of a cigar box. In those days, there were dozens of tobacco stores in Vancouver, so I came home with an armload of cigar boxes. All the parts except the earphones were 10 and 15 cents at the hobby shop, so I was able to scrape up enough money to get started. Still, without earphones, which were $2.50, I did not know if my radio was going to work. The solution came at Christmas, when the family collected enough money to buy earphones as a present. Not knowing much about antennas, I tried the bed spring for an antenna and the water pipe for a ground. I was able to hear one station nearby, and my grandmother thought I was a genius. By upgrading to the clothesline, I was able to tune in two or three more stations. Unknowingly, I guess I was already hooked on radio. With a Saturday morning job sweeping floors and washing windows at the radio store, I managed to build up a credit of 50 cents a week. Eventually, I was able to create a sufficient amount for a used Radiola 3A. For some reason, it had been modified and only had one tube instead of the original two. For me, that did not matter, as it was more powerful than a crystal set. Later, with more credit, I was able to get the other tube reinstalled. The next Saturday job was delivering for a grocer. The hours were from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., and the pay was $1 plus 50 cents because I used my own bike. Still, I was able to save enough money to buy a more powerful radio with peanut tubes. In the early 30s, the major stores put on radio shows to present the new models. Of course, I made sure I went to see all of them, although owning one was just a distant dream. One of the larger stores went one step further by having an operating amateur radio station. At this stage, I knew nothing about amateur radio, so I had to investigate. A personal chap went to great lengths to explain the whole operation and ended by inviting me to his home to see his rig. He also told me about the big radio club and how to get there. To say the least, I was mighty impressed. I had had other pals in school who were also interested in radio and electricity. So far, we had only been experimenting with the telephones between the house and the woodshed. I went home, I rounded up my buddies, and we started work on getting a ham license. As a result of this new discovery, the telephone system became a Morse circuit with keys and buzzers. We were practicing between the house and the woodshed. Right away, we ran into a problem. The overhead wires acted like an antenna, and the buzzers were similar to a spark transmitter. As a result, we wiped out all the broadcast sets in the neighborhood. Not to be deterred, we just changed our modus operandi for learning the code. It was still the early 30s, and jobs and money were scarce, but we did have lots of time. My buddies and I eventually passed a ham test and formed our own radio club. Friends and neighbors all knew of my interest in radio. One had me in mind when he heard a large department store needed a radio serviceman. I got the job, and this, by luck or fate, became a major step in my life. At morning and afternoon break time, I started going to the in-store lunch counter for my coffee. I always sat at the same counter and was served by a good-looking girl. This happened so often, I asked her for a date. Those dates became more and more frequent, and she eventually became my wife of 64 years. Shortly before getting married, I was transferred to another store, and the boss was determined to make me super salesman like himself. He was so good, he could sell radios that did not even work. I had other ideas and started taking night classes to get a commercial operating certificate. When he heard what I was doing, he fired me. This proved to be one of the best things that ever happened. The local radio parts wholesaler thought I got a dirty deal and told me of a chap looking for an assistant to build experimental equipment on a survey ship. The chief operator was about my own age and a fella ham, so I got the job. The work turned out to be a ham's dream, building equipment with the best of parts. After getting the job, I was told in order to keep it, I would have to have a commercial operating certificate. It was back to the books in a hurry, and I was able to get the ticket and keep the job. Within a year, the chief operator left to go to engineering school, and I took his place. This created a problem because now I needed help, and the chief hydrographer said no. I could not carry on alone, so I walked down the same street and joined another government department as a radio operator. In making application, I specifically requested the aviation section. My reasoning was that planes traveled 200 miles an hour, and ships only went about 20 miles per hour. I thought aviation would be more exciting. After months training and taking weather observations, I was posted to a semi-isolated station in the mountains in the middle of nowhere with no airport. The closest planes were about 10,000 feet away, straight up. During the wartime, the work was assigned an essential service. I was so bored, I told my boss I was joining the Navy. He just said, "No, you are not, and if you try, I'll take you out of uniform and send you to the Arctic for punishment." After a big argument, I was told to head back to my station. Being newly married, I did not look forward to going to the Arctic as a single man. When I got back to my station, there was a transfer to the Vancouver airport, where I operated for 4 years. The Vancouver airport was a busy station with 5 operating positions. We were tied into some of the same circuits as the Northwest staging route. The traffic was a mix of air, ground, and a point-to-point CW. The CW traffic was reservation, flight plans, cargo dispatches, and government business. It was a very interesting experience. Promotions took me through supervision and management in the Eastern Arctic, even after retirement when I took a part-time job at what I call a fun job in the Arctic. It was all related to radio connections, experience, and especially hamming. The airline director of communications was a ham I had worked back in 1934. My wife, who also got her ticket, and I have had hams visit us from about 25 different countries, including Pitcairn Island, Christmas Island, and South Africa, to name a few. We also had the opportunity to visit some of our visitors in their country. Now I can look back and realize how my life has been influenced by luck, fate, and radio. It all started with a crystal set built on the lid of a cigar box. I often wonder how many others have taken the time to reflect on what has influenced their lives. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this brings me about up the time for this month's reading of World Radio Magazine in digest form. This is the January 2009 issue. It is the last issue that is being published in print. Here at the Courage Handy Ham Center, we will be looking at the options of still continuing to take the written word off of the internet connection for CQ Communications Incorporated, and incorporated as a taped production similar to what we're doing right now. So I hope you have a great 2009. This is Bob Zeta. My call is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. The recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. 73.